if I'm capable of in real time processing, you know, multiple tens or twenties of people in the room, their emotions in real time on a tiny little computer that's no more powerful than your mobile phone, what can social media companies do with all this data?
Das sagt Thomas Webb hier bei MDBK Talk. Webb bezeichnet sich als Konzept- und Medienkünstler. Der Brite fällt durch seinen Look auf, mit pinken Haaren und schwarzer auffälliger Kleidung und Sonnenbrille bleibt der Blick doch erstmal an ihm hängen. Schon als Jugendlicher hat er gerne programmiert und im digitalen Raum experimentiert. Sein Nachname Webb ist übrigens kein Künstlername. Er hat für die Ausstellung Link in Bio Kunst nach den sozialen Medien eine künstliche Intelligenz so trainiert, dass sie menschliche Emotionen erkennen und im wahrsten Sinne des Wortes spiegeln kann. Über diese Arbeit sprechen wir in dieser Folge, denn unser Fokus liegt auf Werken, die sich mit künstlicher Intelligenz beschäftigen oder damit im Zusammenhang stehen. So wie auch die Installation der dänischen Künstlerinnen Stine Deyer und Mari Munk, die in einer Videoarbeit und mit mehreren Objekten versuchen, Empathie für künstliche Intelligenz zu wecken und die Grenzen des Menschlichen austesten. In dieser Podcast-Folge möchte ich gemeinsam mit den KünstlerInnen Antworten auf die Fragen finden, wie intelligente Technologie uns im Umgang miteinander beeinflusst, wie sich unser Umgang mit Technik und digitalen Medien verändert hat und welchen Einfluss künstliche Intelligenz auf unser Privatleben und unseren Alltag nimmt. Mein Name ist Juliane Neubauer und Sie hören
MDBK Talk, der Podcast vom Museum der Bildenden Künste Leipzig.
Die erste Arbeit, mit der wir uns jetzt genauer beschäftigen, ist der Emotional Response Authenticator von Thomas Webb. Hier spielen Emojis eine wichtige Rolle. Es gibt kaum noch Kommentare unter Beiträgen in den sozialen Medien, in denen die Symbole nicht verwendet werden. Sie sollen ohne Worte Gefühle wie Freude, Wut und Trauer ausdrücken. Doch wie echt und glaubwürdig sind diese Gefühle? Und wie verändern neue Medien und Technologien die Art, wie wir miteinander kommunizieren und umgehen? Außerdem steckt in Webbs Arbeit auch Kritik an den Prozessen, die in sozialen Medien quasi hinter den Kulissen stattfinden. Er fragt, was die Unternehmen mit den Fotos, Bildunterschriften und Kommentaren auf ihren Plattformen über die Nutzer, also über uns, wissen und was sie mit den Datensätzen anfangen könnten. Ich habe mit Thomas Webb über die von ihm programmierte KI im Spiegel gesprochen, erfahren, warum der Spiegel als Präsentationsfläche immer wieder von ihm gewählt wird und welche Rolle seine Erfahrungen mit Depressionen in seiner Arbeit spielt. Sollten Sie vereinzelt ein Knistern hören während des Interviews, dann ist das übrigens nicht Ihr Kopfhörer oder Lautsprecher, sondern ein kleiner Wackelkontakt des Mikrofons.
What I wanted to do was I wanted to try and create a piece that could mimic your facial emotions in real time and then recreate them as emojis, well, like neon emojis, because I think neon's this like thing that people are attracted to. It's a very like attractive medium. And my theory with the emojis is that they're this like hyper version of your emotions. So what I wanted to do was, if I can show people in a mirror themselves, but then also an emoji, which is they would immediately, when they go up to the mirror, they would realize that the emoji was responding to their facial expression. And what I found fascinating about that was that they just start laughing. And when they start laughing, they then look surprised. And when they look surprised, the mirror looks surprised and they start laughing again. You have this like feedback loop. And the interesting experiment there is that it shows how emojis create these non-verbal cues, these non-verbal emotions that are hyper-extended above the normal emotions that we emote when we're face-to-face. And so if 80% of all communication is non-verbal, then with emojis online, if emojis are the non-verbal communication, then really they are a hyper overextended, you know, over-exaggerated version of how we actually feel. And that's been shown in memes, you know, people looking at their phone and looking really unhappy and clicking, like laughing my head off. You know what I mean? Like people, oh, it's so funny, and they're not actually laughing. So I wanted to play on that. And I also wanted to play on the idea of now how AI can even do that, if that's possible. You know, if I, an artist in my studio, can build a internet-free AI that can understand in real time, you know, 20 people in the room and all their emotions. If I can do that, what can social media companies do with this metadata? So all the photos, all the videos that we upload, is there a subset of metadata that they have about our the emotional state, or you know, our emotional expressions or emotional interactions between one another, the way we look at one another in photographs and videos? Do they have that data? Do they use that data to create maps of relationships and etc. between people, and how we're feeling, and the progression of how we're feeling throughout the seasons or the days or the weeks?
So you're working mirror-based, right? Why is the mirror an important object for you?
If as an artist you want to show and express something from your point of view and maybe, you know, your perspective, then the goal should also be to make it accessible and easily understood. And so with my work, I use the mirror as a method of hiding technology. I don't want you to see the technology. I want to do the very thing that the internet has done to you for the last 20 years. I want to hide the magic of the technology behind the mirror. And so, but I also like the idea of placing the subject inside the mirror. You know, we live in this selfie world. Everyone's taking photos, recording data. They don't really know why they're doing it. They're just recording. And the mirror gives them the opportunity to be in the recording, which is kind of really now how we all want to be the main character in our narrative. And if our narrative is the collection of photographs we make over our lifespan, the mirror is the perfect opportunity for you to create another opportunity, another moment in that narrative. And so what I do is I put my work in that mirror, and then it forces people in a way to see it. You know, if you put a mirror in a room, people walk up to the mirror straight away. It's like a passage into another dimension. But then the thing is that I also kind of invented this new type of infinity mirror, which is a totally different thing. And when I started with this mindset of making mirrors to, you know, put my artwork in front of people that was digital artwork, but that looked like it was a part of the world and had depth, I invented the digital infinity mirror because it allowed me to show digital artwork in four dimensions. So the infinity effect created this, when you walk around the piece, it becomes three dimensional. And now it's more of a light sculpture. It's like a kinetic light sculpture. And I find that to be, like, in its own right, the best thing I've ever and ever will do, because it transforms things that are created with computer code from being two-dimensional into actually being three-dimensional objects that move and interact with physics that I've programmed, or the internet, or AI, or your facial expressions, whatever it may be. And that, I think, visually is magical.
Do you consider yourself like an internet artist?
I mean, I wouldn't categorize myself as like a part of the net art movement of like artists that were making net art. I definitely have made quite a few internet art pieces, you know, websites that I have on the internet. You can go and view my works. But I always originally made them in a traditional sense. My goal was always to try and make traditional bodies of work that felt like things you could hang on the wall. And that's why with all my stuff, you know, you plug it in, it's like it just starts working, and it's a very straightforward process. And I want them to feel like paintings, but of the future, and not like hard drives that you plug in, or you know, websites you have to visit. You know, it has to exist in its own encapsulated. Right. So I guess, yeah, but am I an internet artist? Yeah, I use the internet, definitely. Am I a sculptor? Yeah, I build, you know, sculptures and stuff. I don't really know what the word is to describe like what it is that I do. I'll take anything that people give me. I'm just Thomas Webb.
Great.
My name's perfect, though, for being an internet artist.
You reflect on the topic of emojis, about using emojis in a way we do nowadays. Do you believe, or how far do you think emojis also keep us from really talking about our feelings? Is this like a way around to avoid talking about our real emotions?
So I had this conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and a lot of my work is about depression, mainly my experience with depression. And so what I find with not just even emojis, but just more expressing yourself online, is that now we live in this world where everyone wants to support. We're very liberal. right? So when we speak of mental health or whatever, everyone wants to say, I support this, and we have Mental Health Awareness Day and all of these things. And that's brilliant. That's great. But what I'm starting to realize is that what we need more of is people actually talking about how they feel. And what I've started to realize is that the people who feel depressed experience pain and sadness on a different level to those people who don't experience depression. And so you have this miscommunication between people who have suffered from depression and those that haven't. And therefore trying to explain to it is very difficult. And I think art is, you know, very like a powerful tool for trying to aid in that. And that's something that I wouldn't say necessarily try to do, but maybe is perhaps a byproduct of my work that explores depression. You know, it's like a Munch's screen painting. You know, that could be like how I feel when I walk into a crowded room at a party. But someone could use that emoji to be like, oh my God, I just got a text from this person I like. Or they could use a sad face like, oh my God, like I didn't get those shoes that I wanted. And so this very powerful visual thing gets reduced down to a simple emotion. And so that's the problem I feel like is coming from this whole. Mental health is like fashionable now. You know what I mean? It's like a fashion trend. And what I find when I talk about mental health is like, if I cut to the very nitty gritty of it, a lot of people are very shocked by like, oh, no, there's a period of like 6 months where every day all I think about is how I'm going to kill myself today. And when you talk to people like that, very frankly, they're like, what? No, you can't do that. No, what are you doing? And I'm like, what do you mean I can't do that? I'm not saying I'm going to, but I think about it all the time. And that's, that conversation is the conversation that needs to be had. And that's only had from honesty of how you feel. Hey, Tom, how you doing today? Not great. I've just been thinking about how am I going to kill myself today? Whoa, people get uncomfortable. And I'm not surprised. It's a very uncomfortable thing to have to hear, especially from someone you care about. But what's important is that that conversation is had with like-minded individuals so that you can create empathy. And empathy is created through, in fact, one of the versions of the mirror is called artificial empathy, right? Because there's nothing real about an emoji. What you want is someone to say, I know exactly how you feel.
Thomas Webb versucht uns hier zu ermuntern, nicht nur mit Emojis zu kommunizieren, sondern öfter auch mal ein paar persönliche Worte zu finden. Der Medienkünstler hatte im letzten Jahr übrigens größere Kooperationen mit Marken wie Mercedes-Benz und Valentino. Die finden seine künstlerischen Arbeiten mit KI natürlich besonders spannend, wenn es um Marketing für innovative Produkte geht, wie eben das intelligente E-Auto von Mercedes zum Beispiel. Sprechen wir über die Installation Synthetic Seduction von Stine Deyer und Marie Munk. Teil der Arbeit ist ein Video, in dem der Zuschauer eine künstliche Intelligenz in Form einer menschlichen Gestalt dabei beobachtet, wie sie ein Lied einstudiert. Dabei sieht sie sich im Spiegel und befindet sich scheinbar in einem OP-Saal. To change this lonely life, I wanna know what love is. Oh, I want you to show me. Oh, wanna feel what love is. Oh, I want you can show me. I Wanna Know What Love Is heißt der Song der Band Foreigner, der hier im Video von der KI eingeübt wird. Und Foreigner betiteln die Künstlerinnen auch diese Videoarbeit, denn die Gestalt wirkt fremd und versucht, Menschliches, also für ihn oder sie Fremdes, zu erlernen. Neben dem angestrengten Singen über die Liebe probiert das Wesen im Video auch mit seiner Mimik zu spielen, sich Menschlichkeit, Emotionen anzutrainieren. Hier drängt sich die Frage auf, wie menschlich künstliche Intelligenz oder Roboter eigentlich sein können. Neben dem Video gehören zu Munk und Deyers Installation auch mehrere unterschiedlich große runde Objekte, die aussehen, als seien sie aus menschlichem Fleisch und Blut. Die Objekte versinnbildlichen für Marie Munk den menschlichen Körper, der zunehmend zu einer trägen Masse wird, wenn Maschinen immer mehr Aufgaben von Menschen übernehmen. Seit 2017 arbeiten Deya und Munk zusammen. Die Objekte, die sie erarbeiten und auch die Videoarbeiten, lassen oft die Grenzen zwischen Mensch und Technologie verschwimmen. Das Interview zu ihrer Arbeit in der Ausstellung Link in Bio haben wir in einer Skype-Konferenz geführt. Marie Munk hat sich von London aus zugeschaltet, Stine Deya aus Kopenhagen, und die unterschiedlichen Umgebungen, die werden Sie im Interview auch hören. Zunächst habe ich Stine Deya gefragt, wie die Idee zum Video Foreigner entstanden ist.
It was kind of like one of the most simplest ideas I feel like I've had, that just was like I just have to try it out, and then you'd never really know if it's gonna work or not. But I think often it's also in the simplest things that people can relate. And I think in a way this was a way to make kind of a robot very relatable, because it's something we can all kind of imagine doing in the shower, or like if we're alone somewhere, singing along and just like, yeah, letting ourselves go. But actually another thing that I had never really thought about before with this video that I just like realized the other day, which was a bit like an aha moment, was that maybe actually this person inside the video is me. Like, because actually I spent a lot of time in a hospital at some point, and I wasn't feeling so well. And I had never really seen the video with these eyes that, oh my God, maybe this person is me. Maybe this is like a self-portrait.
If I go to the exhibition and I see this piece, it's body parts lying around, round body parts, but then in the middle of them is some kind of screen showing the same parts. Is there a connection to the video work?
Actually, the project we did, the overall title was Synthetic Seduction. So that was kind of overarching the whole exhibition we did. But then also this specific work is also called Synthetic Seduction. But our project was a lot about kind of how physical present and digital present, if it's the same. And we were looking into kind of intimacy in a more digitalized world. So it all kind of came out of that. But I think the specific work, Synthetic Seduction, is maybe more about the physicality, and not so much the foreigner video is more emotional or human, intimate in a way, where this work is kind of more the something biological. It's like almost like an experiment, like if you look in a loop on close, like you zoom in on the cells or something, and then there's this like kind of conversation between the digital and the animated, and then these physical blobs, but none of them are really real, or are they? So yeah.
But I think they also kind of do belong together somehow, because you can kind of imagine these physical sculptures being in that room that the foreigner is in, because that is kind of a space for like building humans. So in a way, there's a conversation between the works that I think was kind of something we thought about, like overall, that all the works need to communicate somehow.
Yeah. And they were kind of all situated in this laboratory hospital environment. So there was, which gave it all kind of something like experimental, but also something vulnerable, maybe, or I don't know.
How did you come up with the texture or the fabric that you use for those, let's call them body partish pieces? Because I mean, they look pretty real from the outside, and there's definitely a barrier to touch them. How did you make them?
Well, they're made out of silicon, and the silicon that it's the same silicon that is used in
like special effect masks and stuff. So it's supposed to imitate skin, both in the way it feels and the way its elasticity or whatever you can say. Yeah, there's something interesting that it also feels a lot like skin, I think. And then also another part of the full synthetic seduction project was also like this sculptural piece that you could actually sit in and physically touch the sculptures while watching this video piece that was connected to the work. So it was also a part of it, the touching. And then we've realized that every time, because actually this synthetic seduction work, it's not really for touching, but we realized that it's impossible to exhibit these works without people touching them, because that's something that attracts people, they just can't hold back.
I think this was actually also this synthetic seduction piece that is in Leipzig right now is one of the first ideas we kind of had. So this was a, yeah, it was just like a really playful piece somehow that where we were like putting our two practices together in a combined kind of sculptural way.
Came very intuitively from like sides, yeah.
And I think you can see that in the piece that it is kind of like fun and light, but also like has a deeper meaning.
There is kind of this dilemma where you reach a point where they become too familiar. So there's, it's quite an interesting curve in a way. And it was something talked about a lot, like kind of playing with this, both the recognizable and the abstract. So the balance of these two, and also the balance of something that is quite like attractive and something that is quite repulsive in a way. So that was kind of the point in the works as well, that you would have this doubt whether you were kind of, if they were familiar or unfamiliar, or whether they were cute or nasty, or if they were human or unhuman, or yeah. So it kind of gives a more interesting experience, because it raises more questions in a way for the viewer, and feelings, I think, as well.
Yeah.
I read that you state that we are all cyborgs. What leads you to this conclusion, and does that include you and me as well?
Well, I think we're all cyborgs because we're kind of stuck to our phone and computer all the time, which is basically a definition of a cyborg, to augment yourself in some way with technology. So, I mean, most of the Western world people, they are definitely cyborgs nowadays.
Is that a problem?
Not necessarily, I think, but it does come with some with a more complex social network, maybe, and a more complex world in general. I mean, it's changing things a lot, not necessarily to the worse or to the better, but it has an effect on how we behave and how we perceive things.
I mean, cyborgs is both. It's a body. It's a mixture of human and technology. Do you feel like the focus got too much on the technology and should get back a little more to the body? Or is that something that you think about as well?
I think it's, for me at least, it's something that I really think about. Not that I know the answer to your question, I think, but the technology can easily have the power over you, but you can also easily have the power over the technology. And I think maybe what is at stake now is that it's rarely we actually make up our mind about which one we want to be in the power relation. And that's maybe what is relevant.
Marie Munk sagt hier, wir müssen uns entscheiden, ob wir über die Technologie herrschen wollen oder die Technologie über uns herrschen lassen. Mit ihr und Stine Deja habe ich über die Installation Synthetic Seduction gesprochen und erfahren, warum viele von uns heute Cyborgs sind. Einen weiterführenden Text zum Thema künstliche Intelligenz gibt es im Katalog zur Ausstellung, Link in Bio zu lesen. Darin ein kurzer Überblick über die fast 80-jährige Geschichte der KI und die Positionen der Künstler Thomas Webb und Sebastian Schmieg. Kuratiert wurde die Ausstellung Link in Bio, Kunst nach den sozialen Medien von Annika Meyer. In der nächsten Folge MDBK Talk spreche ich mit 4 KünstlerInnen über Post-Digital Pop und natürlich über ihre Arbeiten. Mit dabei unter anderem auch Olli Epp, der über soziale Medien als Maler fast über Nacht, könnte man sagen, erfolgreich wurde. In den letzten Jahren hat er einige seiner Bilder direkt über Instagram verkaufen können, ohne dass die Käufer sie in der Realität je gesehen haben. Wie er sich das erklärt und was auf seinen Bildern zu sehen ist, das erfahren Sie in der nächsten Folge. Sie können diesen Podcast abonnieren bei Spotify oder Apple Podcasts und weiterhin finden Sie ihn natürlich auch bei SoundCloud. Ich bin Juliane Neubauer und freue mich, wenn wir uns wieder hören.
MDBK Talk, der Podcast vom Museum der Bildenden Künste Leipzig.